This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Broadband Over Powerline World. We're about to speak to David Sumner, who's the CEO at ARRL. Welcome to Broadband Over Powerline World.
Thank you, Mark.
Tell our listeners what ARRL stands for.
Well, ARRL is the abbreviation for American Radio Relay League. We're the National Association for Amateur Radio, and currently we're celebrating our 90th anniversary.
That's impressive. How many members do you have nationwide, and how many of them are in California?
We have about 152,000 members nationally. In California, I would guess it must be about 20,000.
Okay. Some people, as I've been covering the story, have been asking why, saying, is there still amateur radio in the age of the internet? Why don't you explain why people are still ham radio operators, even though they can reach people instantaneously all over the world on the internet?
Well, because we don't need the internet.
Okay.
We don't need any infrastructure. We're able to communicate, as people have been doing since Marconi, just using the ionosphere, and just natural phenomena. We don't need a multi-trillion-dollar infrastructure in order to communicate instantaneously.
Okay. Although, I assume some of your members also are avid internet users?
Oh, absolutely. Amateurs are generally very early adopters of new technology. Well over 90% of our members are on the internet, and the rate of adoption of broadband among amateurs is much higher than the national average.
Okay, so they're in no sense Luddites, anti-technological, or opponents of the internet as such.
Oh, quite the contrary. We're using the internet every day to enhance and facilitate what we do in radio.
Okay, let's focus on the physics before we get into the politics. Why is it that sending broadband signals through power lines tends to interfere with radio transmissions by amateur radio operators?
Well, first of all, it's not just amateur radio operators.
Okay.
It's anybody who uses the radio spectrum, generally between about 2 and 50 megahertz. The problem is that a broadband signal is basically a radio signal. When you're talking about signals in the low megahertz range, you're talking about the shortwave radio spectrum, which is the part of the radio spectrum that can propagate all over the world with relatively low power levels.
Does that mean that signals generated by BPL also can radiate all over the world?
Well, that's theoretically, yes. The answer is theoretically, yes. The issue is whether they would be strong enough to interfere if propagated through the ionosphere. That's a question that just hasn't been answered yet.
Okay.
The NTIA...
National Telecommunications...
and Information Administration.
Right.
Is looking into that very question in Phase 2 of its BPL study. They tentatively concluded that it would take a large number of BPL devices to aggregate interference that would cause worldwide interference. But there are some concerns in that regard, and it's one of the reasons why the aeronautical bands were put specifically off limits for BPL in the FCC proceeding.
Okay, this phenomenon of internet signals generating radio waves is not noticeable with DSL, right?
Generally correct. There were some concerns initially with DSL. The DSL system engineers took the problem very much into account from their earliest work. Also, because telephone wires are generally balanced. You may hear them occasionally referred to as twisted pair.
Right.
That also tends to minimize the radiation.
Meaning that the signals that travel through the two wires tend to counteract each other?
Right. Yeah, they tend to cancel each other out.
Go ahead.
With the power lines that are strung down the street, that's not the case because the wires are too far apart for that to for that effect to occur at the frequencies we're talking about.
So DSL signals going through overhead power lines don't tend to generate radio interference?
DSL signals going through telephone wires.
Don't.
BPL signals, which are on the medium voltage power lines that typically go down the street, can and do cause interference. That's the concern we have with BPL systems.
In a sense, in a sense, they're just very large antennas.
Well, they
or
sure
are
look
they?
That way.
Right.
There's, of course, one of the big debates in the FCC rulemaking proceeding was how much power lines are like antennas and how much they are like transmission lines. And the answer is that they're a little bit of both. It's a complex matter to model a power line as an antenna, but you can do it. You can show how it acts like an antenna at different radio frequencies.
Okay, let's cover some of the other broadband methods before we get to BPL again. A cable modem or generation of internet access through cable lines doesn't present any problem either because the lines are all underground or because they're coaxial or
Because
what?
They're coaxial, because they're shielded. If there's any radiation from a cable system, it's an indication that there's something wrong with the cable.
But intrinsic to that technology is the shielding of the coaxial cables to not release any RF
That's exactly right.
Energy. What does that mean that if the power lines were similarly shielded, there wouldn't be a problem?
That's probably true, but the cost of doing that would be prohibitive.
So they're out there. Has your organization been involved at all in the controversy regarding the health effects of power lines apart from their radio interference with transmission of other radio signal issues?
Not directly. The power lines where we're talking about 60 hertz fields, that's really a separate issue from the radio frequency
right.
issue.
Okay.
We have been involved in the development of the standards for exposure to RF radiation.
Okay.
But that's not really an issue with BPL. We're talking about relatively low levels of, in terms of exposure to biological entities, you're talking about quite low fields when you're talking about BPL.
So BPL isn't, as far as you know, a health danger?
Not to the best of our knowledge,
okay.
although we haven't really examined it.
Okay.
I would be very surprised if that surfaced as a serious issue.
Okay. Now, I want to mention wireless, and that's going to need to lead to a discussion of spectrum and licensing. Obviously, wireless distribution of broadband is a radio frequency technology.
Yes, it is, typically using microwave frequencies.
And when they're microwave frequencies, that doesn't get in the way of the amateur radio operators, is that right?
It doesn't get in the way of the shortwave bands that we were discussing earlier. The thing about the shortwaves is there's just this very narrow frequency range where the ionosphere acts to reflect or refract the signal so that they travel over long distances.
Right.
It's a very, very narrow part of the radio frequency range that that phenomenon occurs. And unfortunately, it's precisely that same range that BPL systems, with one exception, are using.
Well, can't the BPL use another frequency or other range of frequencies?
If they go higher in frequency, the problem of radiation from the power lines becomes more serious. The higher in frequency you go, the more energy is radiated and the less energy is carried down the wire. Although there's one company out in California called Corridor Systems
right.
that is working on a 5 gigahertz system that uses the power line essentially as a traveling wave transmission line, and that's a whole different
In relatively simpler terms, does that mean that they're using the power line antenna that we were just talking about as a platform for transmitting wireless signals, and not complaining about it, but actually using it as the primary mode of of transit?
What Carter Systems is doing, and it would be worth your while to talk to them.
I think I've already started to set that up, yeah.
Okay. What they're doing is they're using the property of the power line as what's called a traveling wave transmission line. In other words, they're sending the microwave signal down the wire so that the wire kind of guides the signal. So it's not exactly wireless. It's following the wire.
And when people need to hook into it, do they do it wirelessly or through the plug in their home or office?
That would depend on what the interface device was. You would need something to interface between what Carter Systems is doing and the end user.
And would that be an electric socket or a wireless transceiver?
My guess is it probably would be Wi-Fi.
Right. So in essence, then
the bandwidth available on Wi-Fi is greater.
So they're essentially using the electric power line as an antenna to transmit the wireless signal.
They're using it as a transmission line.
So it's not strictly speaking BPL.
Or
the definition is a little hazy.
It doesn't fit the definition of access BPL that the FCC came up with.
Okay.
Which basically talks about 1.7 to 80 megahertz. However, if you were a power company looking at different ways of using your capital infrastructure to do more things than just transmit power, you might look at the Carter Systems approach.
Okay, why don't
we're not advocating it. We're just saying it's different from the other BPL systems, and it doesn't have the interference potential.
Right. Focusing on access BPL. Now, is this just a cruel irony, or that the narrow range of frequencies that work for ionospheric reflection are the ones that are the only ones that the power lines can use under access BPL to transmit at the internet?
Well, you could just call it poor planning.
Okay.
First of all, sending RF signals down power lines is not a new thing.
Right.
It's been done for decades for control purposes. But those systems generally operate at a lower frequency below the AM broadcast band.
Right.
And they tend not to radiate as much because the lower in frequency you go, the more the power lines look like transmission lines and the less they look like antennas.
Right. So what I'm trying to find out is, could BPL be pitched at a different frequency and be an effective means of transmitting broadband internet connectivity without interfering with the frequencies that amateur radio operators use, or is it just intrinsically impossible?
There is some BPL activity above 30 megahertz in the 30 to 50 megahertz range. That's the current technologies, for example, is using that frequency range for their medium voltage distribution.
Right.
And that frequency range is not used by amateurs. It's not used by others who use shortwave techniques. It is, in some parts of the country, used for public safety communications by police departments, volunteer fire departments, sheriff's departments, EMTs, that sort of user.
It's not necessarily used everywhere, but it is used in some places.
Yes, that's correct.
So when the FCC issued its report in October and touted it as essentially, if not solving the interference problem, setting up a mechanism for resolving the problem, was that wishful thinking and weasel language, or had they really come up with a method that would work?
Well, the existing FCC Part 15 rules would permit BPL. What the FCC proposed in its Notice of Proposed Rulemaking introduced additional restrictions on BPL, and what they ultimately adopted in the report and order add to those restrictions somewhat. So they're moving in terms of looking at it in terms of a radio user looking to be protected. The commission is moving in the right direction. They're just not going far enough The basic problem we have with the Commission's report and order is that they haven't changed the absolute emission limit for BPL down to a level that would reduce the probability of interference to something that would be manageable on a case-by-case basis.
What's the level that they've set so far?
Well, they've maintained the same level for BPL that they have for all other Part 15 devices, even though they acknowledge that the BPL systems represent a greater interference potential because they're broadband, high-duty cycle, attached to wires that run overhead through neighborhoods and so on.
So essentially they're ideally situated to cause interference.
Right.
And they're using the standards that have been set up for sort of sporadic and less well-positioned examples
exactly.
of this.
Yes, exactly. And so what the NTIA found, and we concur in these measurements, by the way, was that at the existing Part 15 limit, which the Commission is sticking to, interference is essentially 100% probability out to about 200 meters from a power line that is carrying a BPL signal.
And that would tend to cover everybody who's, most everybody who's doing an amateur radio process.
Yeah, I mean, you look around, power lines are generally within 200 meters of residences and streets where people drive with their mobile stations, and so we look at this and say, well, gosh, what you're saying is there's a 100% probability of interference if you deploy a BPL. Wouldn't it make more sense to set the limit such that the probability of interference would be lower, would be like 10% instead of 100%?
Now, have you proposed a specific a limit that would do that?
Yes, we did in our comments in the proceeding.
Now, okay.
We believe the limits are set about 30 dB too high.
30 dB too high. So if they went down 30 dB, they'd be okay with you?
Well, they would be getting down to the point where the interference issues would be manageable on a case-by-case basis. In other words, it wouldn't eliminate any possibility of interference, but it would bring the probability of interference down to the level where it could be dealt with as it occurs, rather than just being a foregone conclusion that if you deploy BPL at the FCC limit, you're going to cause interference.
Okay, now two questions. People I've been talking to in the BPL business talk about notching out frequencies. Is that what you mean by individually resolving issues?
That's one of the things that they will have to do.
What is notching out, and how can it be used to solve these problems?
Well, what that's saying basically is that they will reduce the energy of the BPL signal at certain frequencies. They will, for example, take a band of frequencies, and they have to do this to protect the aeronautical bands. There are about 12 different bands that the FCC is prohibiting emissions in, so they have to notch those bands.
Okay.
And
this would be a matter of not, of putting in extra notches for at extra at additional frequencies in order
right.
to avoid
in
the problem.
In the 10 amateur frequency bands that are in this range.
Oh, okay. Now we're going to get into sort of into the sociology and politics of this in a second, but in terms of the again the technology itself, if the lower limit of 30 dB lower than it now is that you're proposing were implemented nationally, what kind of a crimp would that put in the style of BPL? Would they still be able to do what they're doing, or would that mean that they wouldn't be able to operate?
I believe it would make it more difficult for them to operate. They would need to put more hardware in.
Is there hardware that would allow them to... the point is that if they sent it at that lower level, they would need more of what are essentially repeaters, is that right?
That's my understanding, yes. I don't claim to be an expert on BPL, only on the interference.
Right, right. But in fact, in general, if they had more repeaters, they could send at a lower level, and have it repeat. In other words, they just reduce the level. It would be amplified at these repeaters, and it wouldn't be generating the interference that you're talking about, because it would be at a lower level. But it would cost them more to put in all those extra repeaters. Is that?
Yeah, I think that certainly illustrates the trade-off.
Okay.
That are involved.
So presumably, and I'm going to talk to them again about this, they're worried that if they put in more repeaters, then they lose their price point and competition, and then it stops being a viable economic process for them.
Which is already an issue for them, of course.
Right, but it would become more so under that. So there is a technological fix for this problem. It's more repeaters.
Yeah, more repeaters and putting the most sensitive frequencies into the notches.
Putting them aside, not using them.
Right. Now, again, that doesn't solve everybody's problem.
Okay,
whose
problem?
This is one of those cases where you kind of rob Peter to pay Paul.
Right.
If you notch the bands that we use, then what's left are the bands that are used by the military, by federal agencies, by shortwave broadcasters, by CB operators.
And if you notch everybody's band, there's hardly anything left by then, right?
That's the problem.
All right. Well, then we get now. Okay, I think we've got the physics and engineering issues covered. Now, moving on to the regulatory and possibly legal ones. What kind of mechanisms exist? What kind of mechanisms have you been participating in with the FCC or trade organizations of the BPL people to try to discuss or come to some kind of amicable resolution of these issues?
Well, initially we didn't get a very positive reaction from most of the BPL industry. I don't mean to generalize in making that comment, in general,
who speaks for them? Who do you talk?
Who do you go to? UPLC and PLCA.
Okay, that's the United Power Line Council.
Council and Power Line Communications Association.
And they're essentially the trade association of BPL.
Right.
And they're big advocates. They were the first interview I did for this program was with them.
First of all, I need to say that they have become much more aware of and sensitive to the interference issue as time has gone on. But initially, we encountered quite a lot of denial. We encountered, there's no interference, there can't be any interference attitudes.
Right.
And it took us a while to work past that.
Did you do studies and give them the data or
Yes. Bring
them out in the field and work with them? Or what kind of things did you do together?
We've done recordings. We've done measurements. There's an extensive study was done in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, last spring, where there was a system installed, and engineers who installed it spent 12 weeks trying to eliminate the interference. They never could eliminate the interference. They finally just terminated the test.
Right. So essentially, were you out there in parking lots sometimes with the BPL people, and so that you could look at the meters and see at the same time what the results were, so that they couldn't argue about that?
Out there, there was a team of local engineers that that did do that. It has not always been the case that we've been able to get in the same place at the same time.
Right. Have they disputed data that you've submitted to them?
Yes, to some extent they have.
Okay, and where do things stand now in terms of their denial acceptance of your data?
We're still working on that.
Is there an ongoing working group task force?
We have open communication. We'd like to have more cooperation with industry, but we do have a cooperative relationship with several companies and with the associations.
Okay. Now what's the role of the FCC in mediating this dispute, and what's the role of the IEEE in this issue?
Well, the role of the FCC is to enforce the regulations, and the regulations state that a unlicensed device, such as a BPL system, can only operate on condition that it not cause harmful interference.
Okay.
and that it must tolerate any interference that it encounters from licensed radio services.
On that subject, how much reverse interference is possible, or is that an issue? Are BPL providers complaining that amateur radio operators are interfering with their signal?
Well, they're not complaining because they can't complain.
Oh, okay.
They have no basis for complaint.
No legal basis.
Right.
Is there a technical basis on which the signals can cause interference in the other direction?
Yes. Oh, yes, and that's been documented in submissions we've done to the FCC. We've been able to show that that with some systems, we don't have data on all of the various BPL systems, but on some systems, a relatively low-power signal can slow down and occasionally even completely shut down the data transfer rate.
Okay, and is there spying or interference possible across these two modes of transmission? Can people listen in to the internet signals?
That would depend on what sort of security was in use. I have to assume that these systems are aware of the security issue and are taking appropriate steps to encrypt the data. I can't imagine somebody offering a service like this and not having it encrypted.
Okay, and so the FCC's job is to enforce the standards. Whose job is it to set the standards?
Well, the standard is that you can't cause harmful interference.
That's an FCC standard.
That's actually an ITU.
International Telecommunications Union.
Yes, yeah, that's something that the United States has agreed to it essentially has the status of a treaty.
So if you're operating in an unregulated frequency, the rule is you can't interfere with other people's transmissions.
Reception.
Okay. Does the IEEE have any role in this?
IEEE has taken a look at this, I think, in a couple of different ways. One is that they've looked at it from the standpoint of is this good engineering practice to put RF down power lines?
Right.
Of course, there's a great deal of skepticism about that. And the other is in terms of safety standards, and I think those are still in the early stages of development. So there will be more. The IEEE will be doing more on the subject as time goes on.
Okay. Now, with all of this, does this mean that using BPL ought to only be done in areas that don't have any amateur radio operators, and are there any such areas? Are really sparsely populated areas in which there is no DSL and no cable modems and not wireless yet? BPL would make a sense from that point of view, and there are few enough amateur radio operators that it wouldn't matter too much? Or?
That's the problem, of course, is that in sparsely populated areas, BPL isn't economic. Because you need even now you need the repeaters about every couple of thousand feet.
So right.
If you're serving a remote area, you're probably going to do it using wireless rather than BPL. We anticipate problems whenever BPL systems are deployed at the FCC limit in areas that have radio amateurs, which is virtually anywhere you might have population. Now, of course, BPL system operators can voluntarily operate well below the FCC limit and reduce the probability of interference.
And have you asked them formally or informally to do that?
Well, the ones who are deploying at this point are well aware of the issue and are trying to do that. The main problems we've had have been in test installations where there doesn't seem to have been a very high level of understanding of the issue going in.
They go all the way to the limit. They do cause the problems, but you're saying that in the more commercial installations, they're more aware of it and they're making efforts to try to avoid the problem.
They're certainly making efforts, yes. Whether those efforts, because we're still talking about very small deployments.
Right. That's the next point I wanted to raise, that there is no massive deployment of DPL yet.
That's correct.
I've done an informal survey of a number of large utility companies, by and large, they don't seem to have much interest in it.
We found the same thing.
And so is this more of a tempest in a teapot now, or is this likely to tip the balance in some way for decisions of large utility companies not to bother with this? Or how do you see this figuring in the overall decision about whether BPL is going to be deployed very widely?
Well, I think that anyone looking at a business plan for BPL should look to see how much is being allocated for interference mitigation.
Right.
The
mitigation is, as you've mentioned, more repeaters, more notching, lower power.
Lower power, exactly.
All of which, I assume, will raise the cost and lower the efficiency of the system as a way of distributing internet access.
That's my understanding as well. And if you're looking at a business plan for BPL and it doesn't have a substantial figure in there for interference mitigation, then it's just an unrealistic plan.
Because the cost of that is likely to eat up all of and then some of whatever profit margin is envisioned under a business plan that doesn't take that into account.
Well, a good example is the Cedar Rapids situation, where there was 12 weeks of engineering time spent trying to resolve a problem, and ultimately it couldn't be resolved.
Right.
That's a very expensive process, and I believe it's one reason why you haven't seen faster deployment of BPL.
So what efforts is your organization involved in now to educate people, and particularly, I guess, the utility companies, about these issues?
Well, now that the FCC report and order is out, we're planning to do precisely that. We're planning to educate the utilities as to what the regulations require as far as protecting radio amateurs and others, and to give them some idea of what it would cost to do that so they can factor that into their consideration.
Okay, is there some time frame here? Because the initial reaction to the order of the FCC in October seemed to be a lot of enthusiasm for BPL. And
yeah, particularly before anybody had a chance to read the rules.
Right, and so I guess you're the countervening force here. What kind of timetable do you see for your educational efforts and decisions by utilities about BPL?
In the next few months. I wouldn't want to pin it down any more specifically than that.
Okay.
It's an ongoing process. We've had a lot of back and forth with utilities and others who are looking at the overall issue. A lot of utilities, and we certainly don't regard utilities as the bad guy here. They're obviously looking for potential revenue sources and for ways to do remote meter reading and selective power control and so on.
Are those functions less likely to generate these problems than offering broadband to the customers?
In principle, they should be less, because there would be a lot less bandwidth required.
Okay. And therefore,
in fact, you could do all of that in that frequency range I mentioned before, below the AM broadcast band. You wouldn't even need the...
So there would be no RF problems for...
I can envision a system, if all you wanted to do was the meter reading and remote control and so on, you wouldn't need the frequencies above the AM broadcast band.
And, of course, the utilities know that.
Oh, yes. They've been using those frequencies for decades.
And so it would only be if they want to generate that new revenue stream by providing their customers with internet access that the issue comes up at all.
I believe that's correct.
Okay.
I mean, you can also do those functions in the high-frequency spectrum, in that 2 to 30 megahertz range, there's no compelling reason to do it there.
Would it give them greater control or faster meter reading or more flexibility?
It would give them more bandwidth, so I guess in that sense it would give them more flexibility. But
okay.
The cost, of course, is the interference issues are
right.
are dramatically greater.
Okay. Now, how well organized is ARRL politically to either lobby or to educate the public? And you're a communications network, obviously. Do you use your own means to put out advisories and organize the amateur radio operators all over the country to pursue whatever issues you're involved with?
Well, we've regarded ourselves primarily as an educational source on the issue. We are certainly advocating on behalf of radio amateurs and trying to point out to other radio spectrum users that they have a dog in this fight as well.
Okay.
Shortwave listeners, for example, people who listen to broadcasts from overseas stand to be very negatively affected by BPL interference, but there isn't any single large organization that represents their interests.
Okay. Has there been a movement to create one, or to make a political arm of your organization?
There's been a movement to bring those folks into coalition with us, but in terms of a massive grassroots effort, no, I don't think we'd say that there has been.
Okay. Before we wrap up, let me address the particular incident that led to my contacting you to do this interview. Last week I interviewed Susan Kennedy, who's a member of the California Public Utilities Commission, and she was, I guess, in your view, excessively optimistic in her opinions about BPL. What happened with that? How did her remarks come to your attention? What was your reaction to them? What have you done? What have you heard back from her, if anything?
Well, we just wrote her a letter last Friday
right.
that I haven't received a reply to yet. I wouldn't expect to receive one so soon, although we did send it by fax.
Right.
And we simply pointed out that there are a number of good reasons why BPL isn't moving forward as fast as she seems to expect, and the one that's of concern to us is the interference issue that we've just discussed. We're just encouraging her to learn a little bit more about the subject, because there are good reasons for things not going as quickly as she would seem to prefer.
So, in fact, it's part of your general effort to make regulators and companies more aware of what the interference issues are.
That's correct. We've talked to the National Association of Regulatory Utilities Commissioners BPL Task Force
right.
About these issues just a couple of months ago, and we just want people to be aware that the radio interference issue is a substantial potential downside for BPL, because it has to be solved. BPL system operator doesn't have the option of interfering, so they have to have a solution.
And it's fair to say that the FCC regulations touted as a solution to the interference problem really aren't.
They, in our view, they don't reduce the probability of interference. They do provide a mechanism, but not a performance standard for addressing interference as it arises.
Go ahead.
We think that the commission, at the very least, should have specified a time frame by which interference would be resolved.
Have you spoken to this of this recently to FCC, and is communication ongoing between you?
Yeah.
Is there any expectation on your side that they're likely to move in the direction that you want anytime soon?
We're going to be filing a petition for reconsideration. We think that the petition is well grounded factually. If we don't prevail there, the next stop is the Court of Appeals.
Okay. Overall, do you expect that the proponents of BPL are going to heed your warnings and either mitigate themselves, or do you think that they're going to just go ahead and ignore ignore your concerns, or do you think that they might say, well, this makes the whole issue not worth the candle, and we're just going to stop pushing for BPL?
I suspect there will be a little of each of those. There are BPL proponents who are working conscientiously and with every good intention to minimize interference. In terms of their competing with other BPL systems, it's in their interest to do that because interference is now such a significant issue in the whole BPL scene. If your system causes less interference than your competitor's system, you clearly have a leg up.
So does this mean then that we're talking really now about equipment manufacturers rather than utilities?
Yeah, principally equipment manufacturers and suppliers.
In your experience, are there some companies that make systems that are less interfering than others?
Well, we mentioned one earlier, and that's Corridor Systems.
Right. Although you sort of indicated they're not really a pure BPL operation as such.
Well, I think you should talk to them.
I will.
Hear how they describe
themselves. But you're saying that is a way for power utility, the Corridor System is a way for utilities to distribute broadband over their system without raising so many of these problems.
Right. Now, there may be other limitations to the corridor approach.
Right.
I can't really address those.
Right,
but in terms of interference potential, their approach brings interference potential essentially out of the picture.
Okay. Is there any distinction among the manufacturers of strictly speaking, BPL systems that are better than the others?
Well, the one that we've seen so far, and again, this hasn't the deployment is not so widespread that you can reach a general conclusion
right.
about it. But the system that Current Technologies is using.
The company's called Current Technologies?
Current Technologies, Germantown, Maryland, I think.
Okay.
They use low-band VHF, 30 to 50 megahertz, on the medium voltage line.
Right.
That takes it out of the amateur radio bands. Potentially, it raises issues with regard to public safety, as we discussed.
Right.
To get a view of that, you'd have to talk to somebody else.
Right.
But then when they get down to the individual subscriber, they use a home plug device, which does have some notching built into it, to get from that line down into the individual subscriber's home. That approach has somewhat less potential for interference than some others.
Okay. Going back to where we started, really, that your organization and the people in it are big Internet users as well as amateur radio operators and big supporters of having broadband as widely distributed as possible. What, as we wrap up here, would you say the picture is for the future is for BPL, given what we've just been talking about? Do you think, in essence, that there's enough broadband access through wireless cable modems and DSL that it's just not worth the trouble to try to solve all these problems for to provide BPL as an alternative on top of these other existing alternatives?
Well, over the past 4 years, the United States has gone from being about third or fourth in the world in terms of broadband access to being about 11th or 12th or 15th, depending on how you measure it.
You're talking about per capita or overall?
Yeah. Clearly that's in the wrong direction and needs to be turned around. Whatever happens to BPL, it's not going to significantly impact those numbers.
Because it is touted as a universally accessible method of delivering broadband to especially people who don't have it, including in low-income urban neighborhoods.
Well, I think that if you examine the economic case
right.
for that and look at all of the various methods of delivering broadband, I think you'd conclude that There are others that have more promise. If you look out 5 to 7 years from now, people's expectation for broadband is going to be for multi-megabit data rates.
Right.
That's already the expectation in some Asian countries, for example.
Right.
And that's certainly going to be the case here.
And are they using BPL?
No.
Or thinking about
BPL? No, they're generally using fiber.
Right.
Fiber to the premises.
Right.
And, you know, 5, 7, 10 years from now, that's going to be a much more widespread than it is now.
So whatever happens with BPL, you're saying fiber to the premises is the wave of the future for broadband.
Fiber to the premises where it's economical, and wireless where it isn't.
And neither of those create radio interference.
Correct. The wireless has some interference issues, but they're well contained within the frequency bands, the microwave frequency bands where those systems operate.
So you're saying if these radio interference issues and other considerations lead to the demise of BPL before it even gets off the ground, so to speak, that's not going to present much of a problem or have a big impact on how widely dispersed broadband is going to be generally in the in North America?
I think that's correct, because really BPL is... it is really, other than being bidirectional, other than being able to transmit as well as receive data rates, BPL is really more akin to DSL in terms of its the service it delivers to the consumer.
So it's not positioned to provide the multi-megabit rates that you're talking about people expecting.
Right, because it's a shared resource. The power line going through your neighborhood is delivering, if it has BPL on it, is delivering a bandwidth that is shared by all of the subscribers.
The same way cable modems work.
So yeah, very much. Except you're dealing with a narrower pipe.
So the more broadly it's adopted, the less efficient, the less bandwidth it's going to be able to provide to individual users.
Up to the point where the service provider says, well, okay, we've got enough customers here that we can make fiber to the home, fiber to the premises,
right,
viable.
So as a way of introducing more people to broadband and then have them switch over to fiber, it might have some niche there, but that's a pretty restricted function.
I would expect that that's in the business plans of at least some who are promoting BPL. I believe they view it as a transitional technology.
But it's not a transition to a technology that they're going to offer, is it? Or are utility companies going to provide fiber?
Well, actually, the thing that has gotten some utility companies interested in BPL to begin with is that they have a very large dark fiber investment. This is particularly true of PPL in Pennsylvania. My understanding of the reason that they looked at BPL in the first place is because they have all this dark fiber running everywhere.
Oh, so they're going to use the dark fiber
to feed the BPL, which feeds the individual customers. But eventually, if you have enough customers, you just run fiber to them.
And you don't need to use the BPL and have all these problems.
Right.
The Department of Water and Power in Los Angeles is very similarly situated. It has a lot of dark fiber. So, and it's shown some interest in this, but not much. And so, so you're saying for all these reasons, this isn't going to be here for the long haul, so to speak.
Our concern is that it could be a very difficult and frustrating period until we come out the other side of the tunnel.
Is there any way to argue that the loomingness of BPL might encourage the phone companies and other providers to speed up their fiber optic deployment, or is it inconsequential, do you think?
As a competitive
means of
delivering. I haven't detected any of the competing technologies to BPL being particularly worried about it.
And SBC has just announced it's going to spend $4 billion for fiber to the node and fiber to the curb and to the home.
Yeah, and Verizon is doing much the same thing.
Without any action on the BPL front from its potential competitors. So.
Yeah, I think in terms of where the capital investment is going, I think that speaks volumes for what's likely to happen.
Okay, so the likely future is... shining brightly for you as well, if it's fiber optic.
Fiber optic would be wonderful. It has just enormous advantages all the way around.
In terms of very broad.
Very broad pipe, no interference issue at all, but a high installation cost, no
right.
question about it.
Okay.
Our concern is the interference. If interference weren't an issue, we'd be delighted to see BPL succeed or fail on its merits. And as long as the interference issue can be adequately contained, then that's fine.
But and you have mentioned ways in which that could be done with a lot of conscientious attention to it, I think.
Yes. So we're hopeful that as and if BPL is deployed, that will be fully taken into account.
Okay. Well, people
doing it.
Okay. People will be able to listen to you explaining it. I think it may have some impact. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us on Broadband Over Powerline, and I'll be back in touch as the issue evolves.
Thank you, Mark. My pleasure.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.